If ever the futility of addressing symptoms rather than the root causes of a problem was obvious, the case of the Northwest's totem animal, the salmon, ought to be it. After seeing wild salmon runs decimated in the rivers of Europe and then the Atlantic coast of North America and then the Pacific Northwest, you'd think we'd learn. Maybe we don't care about the fish. Maybe we think science will come to the rescue by domesticating salmon like we have chickens or through genetic engineering. Maybe. Or perhaps the Northwest will do something unique and original, like begin to change the relationship humans have with the evolving landscape. It may take a geomorphologist to point us in the right direction. David Montgomery is professor of geomorphology at the University of Washington. He studies the evolution of landforms and has taken a special interest in how that evolution, some would argue devolution, affects that tasty wild fish. King of fish, the thousand-year run of salmon, might sound like a history of how wild salmon were made extinct, but the new book David wrote reads more like a wake-up call to all who care about this important being. David, just a pleasure to have you on the program.
Why, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Great book. Very easy to read. Of course, I'm interested in salmon for very self-centered motives. They're tasty.
I love to eat them myself.
Yeah, let's hope they stick around, especially the wild kind.
Yeah.
Now, how did a nice professor of morphology like you get involved in an issue like fish?
Well, I got a job at the University of Washington, straight out of grad school, and moved up to the Northwest. And one of the pleasures of working in rivers in the Northwest is that you run into salmon. And not long after I got here, someone took me out to a river full of salmon, and I couldn't believe what these guys were actually doing to the river.
Yeah, that's something that you explain. You talk about salmon rearranging Kennedy Creek, and there's a graphic description, and it's so great. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I had gone out to, a colleague took me out to the creek, and I've done a lot of work studying sort of how pools and rivers form, one of the basic aspects of river morphology. But you can't find a textbook that tells you that a fish will dig a pool or that hordes of spawning fish will carve gravel bars off and change the very nature of the channel in a way that if you came back later and looked at it, you go, how'd this happen? And so I was just enthralled. I had never imagined that fish could move that much gravel in my life.
You got to give us your take on how you went out there. Here you move up from California. You're taken out into something, well, I don't want to use the word pristine because that might not exist anymore. But you go out and you talk about running into the salmon. You really do when they're that plentiful.
You really do. We were wading out into the river, and when the spawning runs in it, they're bumping into your legs. They're really not all that concerned with if you're standing out in the channel. And I've even had a few chase my dog out of the stream.
Chase your dog out.
Chase my dog out, yeah. They're Zena's a little afraid of salmon, I guess is probably the right word, especially the large Chinook salmon in some rivers that she's been in that... I didn't think she didn't trust them.
Zena, the warrior princess black lab chow mix.
That would be her. Yeah, okay. She accompanies me on fieldwork.
Yeah, you do a lot of work with her. That's great. You quote a process in the book of four H's when discussing factors influencing salmon. Can you relate them here?
Yeah, there's four H's that people talk about as the primary impacts on salmon are habitat and habitat quality loss, harvest or overfishing, hatcheries, the production of fish in hatcheries that can end up competing with wild salmon, and hydro, the shorthand for dams that can block salmon from returning to their spawning grounds. And those are the four H's that people tend to refer to in terms of impacts on salmon abundance.
Maybe we can get into a bit of those, or maybe we can cover a little bit of history first. Why don't we do that? Why don't we talk about some of the history of this area to get a sense of that? And one thing that I found fascinating, having this mental picture in the book, is doing field work, you had an opportunity to see remnants of
Lahar.
Lahar, right? A mudslide coming from Mount Rainier that reached what we now call Elliott Bay. And you're digging into the soil and finding sand. And so maybe you can describe that.
Yeah, there was a colleague in my department, Brian Atwater, who works a lot on the old eruptions out of volcanoes through here and the deposits that they'll leave down in the estuaries. And a giant mud flow came off of Mount Rainier, I think about 5,000 years ago, another one about 1,000 years ago.
We're talking the Osceola mud flow.
Yeah, that essentially made it all the way out down the Duwamish River, virtually to downtown Seattle, that created some sort of high bits of topography that are still out there. that where some of the early settlement was in the town, that during work on a public park, a trench was dug across it, and Brian asked me to come out and have a look at it because he thought I would enjoy seeing the stratigraphy there, and being a geologist, of course I'd enjoy that. And essentially there were layers of sand laid down over some of the mudflat deposits that recorded an old rearrangement of the valley bottom. The whole thing had filled in.
Yeah.
And then been re-incised later.
Yeah. And a little more recent, well, of course, we have Mount St. Helens, 1980, and yet the salmon are able to overcome that as well.
The salmon were coming back up into some of the channels around St. Helens within 4 or 5 years. It's one of the amazing things about salmon is they really are incredibly resilient. And part of it's because of their special sort of lifestyle or life history, where there'll be 4 or 5 generations of many species of salmon out in the ocean at any one time. So if a volcano erupts or a giant mudslide wipes the river out, there's a couple generations of fish that don't really know about it yet that'll come back the next year, and if that doesn't work, the year after, and if that doesn't work, the year after that. So they're pretty resilient to things that we kind of view as, you know, horrendously catastrophic disturbances. The thing they're not very resilient to are sustained disturbances. And a lot of the story of salmon declines in Europe and New England and out here is in great part a story about changing how the landscape works on a common basis. It's not the sort of big one-offs like a volcano blowing up. It's sort of changing the amount of sediment, changing the hydrology, rearranging the world in ways that's sustained, that they're not necessarily well adapted to.
The coming of the European Americans, basically, is what we're talking about.
It changed a lot of things. A lot of things in the basic way that the landscapes work. And that's kind of where a lot of my interest comes in.